have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the after show. So, Oliver, it's been a little bit of a time since we recorded the first part. Normally, we do the first segment, we pause, take a quick break, hit the after show. It's been a few weeks, life, business, things have gotten in the way. You ready for kind of the next segment of the show here?
Let's do it. Yeah, it was an exciting conversation. Hopefully we can pick up right.
Yeah, and what's fun, it's a couple things. One is for me and for people tuning in, make sure to check out part one, is normally there's the kind of conversation open form. We're talking about different topics, things that matter to you, questions that I have. And then we roll into the other segments of the show. Anybody who's listened to the show for a while knows what those, you know, parts of the conversation are, especially in part one. We had such a good time just chatting about life and business and all kinds of topics and books, where we essentially went over an hour on that main segment, which I'm going to plug it here. I know we talked about in the first one. You have a podcast, the Next Venture Alliance show. That's really your style. Your style is like, get the guest on there. Hey, maybe somebody.
An hour is warm up for me. We haven't covered
Yeah. You haven't even gotten to the actual questions yet. You're just talking your show. I love it because it's, you know, it's averages around 2 hours. It's a great format. Anyone who knows me knows that I don't believe in the attention span myth. I think if something's valuable and entertaining or interesting, people will listen to it. And I love the fact that you're just curious. You just love human interest stories and learning and uncovering things. And I feel like we did half of that. That was the warm up was the first show. So here we are for part two.
Yeah, this is where you test my actual business broker mettle, right?
I'll find out what you know like about part. Business okay. Brokerage. I love it. And so let's get into it. So the first segment I want to start with on this after show versus where we normally start is let's talk about broker marketing tips. So these are the things that, you know, the quick tips or the rapid tips or the things that come to mind where you've found this to work. Now, you've been at this basically 8 years. You've been through a lot. You work for a great company. There's lots of marketing strategies, lots of things that you've tried, lots of things that you've refined over the years that you think and know work versus what doesn't work. And so what's on that list? Let's start with number one, maybe in no particular order. I don't know if you have them ranked in your mind, but what would be a tip that you have?
I think I do. Yeah, no, okay. A great question. And the number one thing, hands down, and this is going to sound absurdly redundant and just like a Captain Obvious knowledge bomb, but you just got to do a good job. And you have to do more than a good job. You have to, you know, demonstrate not only competence, but excellence, and continue earning trust, because ultimately, the marketing in any business, in my opinion, has to align with what it is that you are selling, right, for the lack of a better word, or transacting in. If it's fun and entertainment, then we're trying to target that. In this case, it's the fundamental commodity is trust. And so how do you market that? Well, you can't do it. You can stay top of mind, but you really, the doing an excellent job part is the foundation of earning trust long term. I'll give you an example. This happened yesterday. This is an example of this type of marketing, but I had a call. It came into the company's phone room. A message was taken. It was relayed to me, rather unclear who it was, kind of vaguely what it's about. I return the call. A gentleman picks up and he starts out with, I want you to know how much I distrust business brokers. I go, oh boy, this was worth your time to call and my time to return the call. And then it said, but I was compelled to make this call and talk to you because I talked to a business owner who just sold a company in this industry. And I didn't know that she had sold. And I conveyed to her how much I didn't want to deal with business brokers. And she said, you haven't met mine. So that's the best kind of advertising. There's nothing I could have done to get this person, this business owner, to pick up the phone other than do one succeed at selling this other business. And I couldn't have just done it. If she just said, yeah, I sold, it was hit and miss. I'm glad I did it. You know, it was okay. It had some challenges, right? No, she gave me a raving review, which got this really skeptical business owner to pick up the phone and call me. So I am my performance, what I do, I am a billboard. That's my marketing. And so I have to recognize that I'm a billboard one way or another, and the business community is looking at me. And I've had many of those types of referrals. And so the referral business in general, you want to leave those kinds of footprints out there. Value, you know, delivering value, not selling, not being in sales mode. What are you giving back before asking for something? And are you comfortable doing that regularly? And again, this isn't specifics, whether you're doing that through social media or blog posts or articles. Are you out there giving back and sharing your knowledge and experience for the benefit with no expectation, right? Just for the benefit because you're a professional, you want to give back and share information, whether or not you have no idea who's looking or listening, whether or not they call
you. You don't.
So, you know, I think that's a hallmark of a professional. Again, you marketing, you're trying to establish yourself and position yourself as a trusted advisor in this business and as a professional. And a trusted advisor shares and gives back. That's what they do. They don't sell per se. The selling is almost a byproduct of what you do. If you're doing well, if you're saying, you know, if you're delivering value, the sale will happen. That's the assumption. And then third, I think, you know, be in person, meet people. In this age where it's becoming more and more acceptable and more commonplace to phone it in, to do everything virtually, I actually see this as a point of pride in the industry sometimes. Hey, I just sold this. I never met the owner. Right? And it's there as a badge of honor, you know, just did this all remotely in another state, never met the buyer and the seller. The deal is done. You know, look at me. I guess you got the result, the deal is done, but ultimately understand that this is somebody selling their lives or exiting or transitioning from a major chapter, probably the largest chapter, in many cases, more profound than parenting, right? Like I have this, like these conversations where people are one-on-one and they share things in confidence. They say, look, how do I characterize what this business is? It's like one of my children. I know it better than I have three children, and I know it better than my because that's where my life went when my kids were young, you know, and this is what I spent. So if in that context, you want to take that on yourself to never meet people and take that upon yourself to transition something like this, something that fragile, and that, you know, that's one way of doing business, I guess, but because if it works. But I would say to me, make the trip, get in the car, you know, marketing, show up in person, show up as a billboard and say, here I am. What can I answer for you? Let's talk about the process. Let's see if we're aligned, because you're going to put in, both of you are going to put in, you know, let's say 1,000 hours over the next 3 to 9 months into this, you know, is 2 hours of shaking hands and looking and just shaking and just kind of looking each other in the eye and saying, hey, can we work together? Do we see eye to eye? To me, that's good marketing, right? Whether and if that means that you don't get the project or pass on it, you know, you've also achieved a marketing goal because you've put yourself out there and said, hey, here's what I do. Does that work? So I'd say those are top three. Writing in general, you know, putting content out there kind of, and to me, those are, you know, numbers 3 through 11 is just kind of staying top of mind, soft reminders. Hey, you know, this takes time. You know, this is a serious process. Anything on those lines, sharing experiences from the trenches, all that's good stuff, sharing photos, sharing war stories. But that's number 4 and on, I would say the three things.
I love it. And I know that for number 3, which is to meet people in person, at least meet them once in this process, like you're talking about, it's such a big transaction. And I think what happens is, I know this occurs in other sales modes where the salesperson does the sale enough times, whatever it is, could be business to business, could be software, could be helping people, you know, consumer, it could be whatever it is. And they get desensitized. They forget that to that person they're talking to that potentially is buying from them, this is a big deal, right? But when you do it every day, you kind of forget, or you could forget if you're not careful. And I love the fact that for you, and also this is an extension of what Gregory, who runs IBA, has with all the brokers, which is get in the car and go meet with people as like just a fundamental thing as a relationship building. And I think one of the keys is that it doesn't scale, and that's okay, because your goal isn't hundreds of transactions a year. And then the other part is that there will be issues. We talked about this before. I think every broker who's come on the show has talked about how many times a deal is going to die or try to die and how many times you have to bring it back throughout the course of those 3 to 9 months, whatever that looks like. And if you don't have the relationship, if there's not a strong enough bond, when things go sideways, there's no foundation for, like, we spent some time, we looked each other in the eye. You know that I'm trying to help you. I have your best interest, but not just because I'm saying it, but because we spend time together.
Actions speak louder than words, right? If you get in the car and show up for a meeting, you know, and you, it's one of 5 buyer seller meetings, and you've been there for every one, you know, and it's a 2-hour drive each way. That would build confidence in whoever I'm hiring. If they're just saying, hey, can you just, you do the meeting and you have, and then just plug me in on Zoom. I'll just be there if you need me. I mean, I've done that in a pinch, I'll be honest, but like, that's not the go-to.
And the challenge with that is that at some point in the transaction, especially towards the end, that business owner is going to look at the commission that a broker is making and go, what did I get for this? And if that broker was never present, never showed up, was basically, you know, electronically mailing it in throughout the process, then there's going to be this calculation in their head. And then again, like if you've heard of the beans in the jar, right? In any relationship, it's can be seen as beans in a jar where there's emotional credits being put in there. And then when things go sideways, when there's an issue in any relationship, there's going to be a withdrawal of beans. And the question is are there enough beans to cover that withdrawal without like emptying the jar? And so those kind of things where you're building the relationship in the beginning, meeting in person, showing them that you're willing to drive for the 5, you know, buyer seller meetings, that's just dropping tons of beans in the jar that will overcome most anything that, you know, gets thrown into the transaction.
And recognize that as a broker, you know, with meeting the clients, you're starting, you know, this, you're unfamiliar parties. Like if you expect like, hey, I gave them a great sales pitch and then some examples of transactions that I've done, or they read some reviews, now they have to trust me. No, like this is a big leap of faith for the seller. So they're looking for those things. They're looking for signs of trust, for signs of stability, signs of reliability, and to feel like they want to feel like they chose well. Yes, it's going to be usually a sizable commission number. Was it worth it? Did they choose well? Do they have any regrets about parting with these dollars, right, for what you've provided and throughout the process? So to me, there's no substitute, you know? So
no reason to treat it like an arranged marriage where the parties have never met, but now they have to basically be locked in step. for the rest of their life, right? You know, just treat it like the relationship that it should be in starting.
Arranged marriage part, right? Like, we'll just meet to have kids. Let's set up that meeting to, you know, to procreate, and then we'll move on. And,
So the other part, it was interesting because you mentioned the first one was the doing a good job, obviously that referral, that testimonial and the reputation in the market when the referral happens. It's funny because I'm thinking about the business owner that called and you called them and said, just want you to know that I don't trust business brokers. It's funny because I know in the moment you're thinking it, but you didn't say it. But I'm thinking like, you could also say, I also don't trust business brokers. Like I get
I listened to this. I listened to what he said. And by the way, I'm meeting him this Friday. you know, an on-site meeting in person. But that was my thought. It's like I'm willing to entertain it, and you're making some great points. And by the way, nothing I say right now should convince you otherwise. It's on me to, the burden of proof is on me to change your mind.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, all the other things, both the online content that you have, which is what you mentioned the second part, which is putting stuff out there, is helpful because if he does look you up before Friday or after Friday, then, you know, that's gonna validate whatever the referral source said about you, and then goes along with the meeting and in person and the beans in the jar and the relationship and eye to eye. And, you know, there's a fascinating book called Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, where he talks about our human survival nature and mode is to make instant, like in the blink of an eye, judgments and decisions about people, friend or foe, and what that vibe is. And, you know, on that phone call with him and then also in person, going to make that decision and then look for evidence one way or another. Either you're a good business broker who he can trust, and then you're going to keep giving him evidence, or he still doesn't like business brokers, and then he's going to look for that. And like the things that you're doing, obviously moving him in that other way, and you'll either help him or you won't.
And I would also say to brokers, what you're saying just brings, kind of helps me categorize things, but there are two kinds of things I think that you're marketing, and you need to know, one, the order of them, and two, which one you're speaking to. And one is credibility and trust, and that's one commodity, and the other is competence. And the credibility and credibility and trust are first. Like that's what they're looking to verify through meeting you, looking you in the eye, asking you questions, getting a referral without you knowing or paying for it, you know, getting an honest market feedback or feedback from a colleague. And then the other, what you just spoke about, the other type of marketing is competence, right? You're demonstrating that you know from your domain professionally, you have a grasp on kind of all the stages of the transaction, but that's still part B. Like I think we oversubscribe to that and say, like, if I just hammer them with everything that I know, and that they say, you know, they may not know that's how they feel, but they're looking to work with somebody they know, like, and trust, right? So have they gotten to know you? Have you shared something about yourself? Can they kind of get a sense of who you are? Do they trust you, right? And then do they like you? I mean, are you kind of, is it nice talking to you? Are you someone who can explain things in a way that makes sense, not talk over people's head with all this industry knowledge, right? And the industry knowledge comes afterwards, right? And oftentimes that data point can come from their advisors and say, you know, yes, we looked at the evaluation that they provided. All of this makes sense. Like, it's a detailed piece of work. And so, you know, the numbers make sense, right? And that's kind of like 25% of it, just kind of a piece of a puzzle that gets put in the corner. Okay, now it makes sense, right? You need that. But if you're just hammering the competence, but you can't go out there and invest an hour, it's not going to work.
And if we think about, like, I think about a similar kind of mode, which would be with a doctor. And so imagine a doctor with a terrible bedside manner who just talks about themselves and their stats or the other patients they've worked on, or, you know, they got pictures of themselves with celebrities that they've worked on, but that's all they focus on. They don't care about you, right? That know, like, and trust is maybe the trust, you know they're good at what they do, but you just don't like them. and if you know they're the best, you might tolerate that, but that's usually pretty rare, because you want that doctor that makes you feel like they actually care about you and that you're important. And then based on how that goes, they shouldn't have to say a lot about how credible they are. Like, they shouldn't verbally have to state it. It should just be clear and obvious. And then the competency comes in to, like, the solution that they're offering. And I think that's the same thing for you when you're meeting with someone, is that know, like, and trust cycle without having to say it so much.
You can't say it. Like, it's like explaining a punchline to a joke. Like, if you're having to, if a long explanation is necessary, it bombed. It didn't work.
It didn't work. Hey, Mr. Business Owner, you can trust me. Just trust me. It's okay. You can trust me. I've done lots of deals.
No, listen.
My mom says that I'm a really great guy, so you can trust me. Don't worry.
I'm a good person. Yeah.
I'm a good person. And it's true, right? It's these things where I see it all the time across other industries, where salespeople focus too hard on the competency and the credibility and leading with that, instead of, you know, leading with the know, like, and trust that, you know, evolves into that. And it feels too like they're trying too hard to convince you.
100%. Yeah. So knowing that difference, you need both, but they're not equal. One is more important. And at the end of the day, this isn't rocket surgery, right?
No,
you can get the material. Yeah, but you, I mean, just, you can't be an asshole and do this.
No, definitely not. Not in do business at some level of scale and consistency. It's just not going to work. If you want to do a deal a year or two deals a year and trip on some deals and not worry about it, then maybe. But that's true for any profession where you could do some low level and have enough people who might want to work with.
Man, you know, Bob Marley, you can fool some people sometime, but you can't fool all the people all the time.
No, that's that's what that works. And then, you know, in this era that we're in now versus what it used to be 20, 30, 40 and years ago and beyond, is that now in the digital age, I mean, like, this is an expression I heard and I love it and I've been using it more, is you are who Google says you are, right? And so you can't run from a bad reputation online like you could before in the snake oil salesman days, right, where you just change towns and trick some more people. And so you do things that aren't proper, or you have a bad reputation, it's gonna get out there on the internet, and then it's gonna be tougher, right? And so it is, in like what you led with of doing a good job and always doing a good job, is this just much easier. Right, it's just much easier to focus on doing
it is, and it's a habit, you know. It's not something that you can sort of fake. You need to kind of embody that as your MO.
All right, let's talk about the next segment, because I'm curious about this for you, because I know you have a lot of experience. I know in all the conversations we've had, so many times lost deals or frustrations or challenges have come up. So in this section here, the lessons of the lost deal, like the deal that got away, you know, usually a good cautionary tale, somewhat for brokers, but also for business owners who might be listening to this and thinking, like, what does a business broker do? How can they help me? Why do I need them? Why can't I just do my own business broker exit, like business exit, like my own root canal, which I know that we talked about in the first part of, you know, you could do it yourself, but do you want to? Like, let's talk about one that comes to mind for, you know, that deal that got away.
You know, and there are many, many lessons here. And my framing is going to be, I mean, I could aim this at brokers and professionals and say, how do you not lose deals? But because ultimately we're here to serve a purpose, to facilitate a deal and bring a buyer and a seller to yes. And that's our goal, is to bring a win-win transaction together. This is going to be more, you know, I think aimed towards people trying to sell successfully in transition, and sort of why things fail on that level. I'd say an example of one. It was a multi-location retail business, successful But right at or post COVID, so like 2020, 2021. So things were changing. So there was a lot of sort of the business has all this historical success, but a, you know, a catastrophic event happened. And what are the, what does that say about this business now? You know, is it now forever damaged? Is it coming back? Do we value it based on what it was on the good old days and say that it's coming back? Are we looking at just a disastrous last 12 months, which they were disastrous for many retail businesses? And so, it, you know, the goal here is no matter the difficult, how difficult the circumstances or what the extenuating circumstances are, because there always will be challenges, is for the seller specifically, prioritize your exit, right? Why are you exiting? And so if challenges come up, do you have an important why? Or are we changing the why every time something comes up? So in this case, you know, there was a deal, there was a kind of an offer and acceptance, and the deal wasn't due diligence. It was difficult to maintain rapport at that time between parties because things were changing so frequently. You know, another mandate will come out. Now we're open. Now we have to close. Now we have to be, you know, maintain distances. So it was understandably a tough time to be buying a retail business. But nonetheless, a buyer was identified and the deal came together. I guess the trust is the right word. It just disintegrated. They couldn't, all of a sudden, people start, this is the moment where I'm trying to focus on is what happens when drift starts occurring in deals. And we can't quite understand, you know, drift and uncertainty and hesitation are dangerous in deals. And if you can't get an understanding of a grasp on why drift is happening or why things have shifted. So in this case, the seller decided that they really weren't getting as good of a deal as they, you know, as what the business was worth. And it was based on probably conversations with parties who, you know, were kind of in their circle and giving advice. But all of a sudden, what they had wasn't attractive. And so deal dynamics became more difficult, right? So if you're not focused on your exit and you're not as interested anymore, or grass is greener, all of a sudden something has shifted, it's now more difficult to negotiate. Everything that the buyer does is picked apart. You know, how dare they do this? We're not talking about this, you know, rather than trying to understand the intent behind certain asks, they're flat out denied. And this, there was a lot of this going on the buyer side as well in this case, just because it was a kind of a volatile time and people were sort of drifting with the headlines. And so, you know, what this resulted in the end is that the deal fell apart and they, none of the goals that they had described to me as, you know, not wanting, you know, having being done with the industry, being burned out, wanting to do something else with their time. They did well with this business, wanting to travel, spend more time together, any of those things, they didn't happen, right? They got to keep the business. They got to be right in this, you know, sort of argument, but the deal fell apart. You know, some of the things that made their way into the equation, I think, again, is other factors such as there was a new package of federal aid was announced, right? So all of a sudden, hey, if we stay on and we run this business for another 6 months and this aid comes in, this changes our financial picture. Right. So now all of a sudden, this calculation of, well, if we stay on, then this, again, our exit goals weren't clear. They were purely tied to finances, or they were still, there was never full commitment from the beginning. Yeah. I couldn't say. right? But there were too many things impacting. And so as a result, the goals, if they were indeed goals that were stated to me that I was working to deliver, were not achieved, right? Despite everyone's best efforts. Another example would be a deal that also was close to being consummated, but again, a buyer-seller drift and sort of an animosity developing on the seller's behalf to how the employees will perceive the new buyer, right? And so this, while it's an important point, it slowly but surely became pivotal, right? Everything we talked about, like, came back to, like, we're trying to talk about, you know, financial terms, we're talking about closing timelines, we're talking about financing, we're talking about lease transfer, and it was all like, well, but when they do come in, what's so-and-so gonna say? Like, they're probably, you know, we talked to, you know, somebody found out or started kind of getting in, and they said that if it's such and such buyer, they're not gonna stay on, right? And so we're now oversubscribed to, the owner spends their lifetime and their funds and their resources and money, time, and energy building this business. They build something of value that the marketplace supports, and then they start deferring. They start diluting their goals with all of these other considerations. What somebody else said, hey, you're not getting a good deal. You know, you should really hold out. Or the employee isn't gonna stay with this. Like, all of these should not be central to a seller decision making. Yeah. So that's two deals that, and maybe they're happy they kept the business. Maybe this was the right thing, but the goals were not achieved. Are they deals that I feel like, you know, ones that got away? Hard to say. I mean, these are, this is more factors that, that creep in and sort of weaken the resolve. Which the resolve, there needs to be a strong decision that the preference, that, you know, the priority is to exit, right? And so exit on agreeable terms, and the seller doesn't have to, you know, accept an offer in a business deal if they don't like the terms. It's not like a residential real estate transaction. But if everything works, you know, if we're checking five of the boxes that you said were important, and you're coming with up with boxes now 5 through 10, then we missed something in early stage conversations.
Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts, and in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in four ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember, you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation.
And you're coming with up with boxes now 5 through 10? Then we missed something in early stage conversations.
What's interesting about those two examples is that common thing that comes up both in sales, I think Gregory mentioned it because in his podcast we did, because I know it's something that's important to him, but in general, business brokers feel like time kills all deals, right? Given enough time, like, deals are just going to fall apart. It's hard to keep something going long-term. And that I somewhat debate that on the surface, but I think underneath the surface of that headline about time is really the drift, the uncertainty, the hesitation, and then these deal dynamics, is that when you have those, that's what's chipping away at it over time. Because, you know, over time, you could keep the deal together, but you have to manage the drift, the uncertainty, the hesitation, and then keep the deal in the same framework that it was, right? Without letting it
shift like in the dynamics. But you could also have those things happen, the drift, the uncertainty, the hesitation in a short period of time. And so you say, well, you know, the deal wasn't around that long. It's like, but it's those factors. It's the underlying things that are chipping away at the foundation of it. And I think that's the biggest lesson, is like putting into those terms of the drift, the uncertainty, the hesitation, is managing that. Your job as the deal manager is to keep all of that from happening. And if it starts to happen, then be ready.
Right. Are we trying to address the right, like in this case, I said, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to problem solve issues that were perceived issues. It wasn't about the financing. It wasn't about the lease. It wasn't about the closing date. It wasn't about the commissions. It was about the fact that they changed their mind. Right. And so that needed to be part of the second set of honest conversations. Hey, we changed our mind. We don't want to do this anymore. We want to keep the business. You know, if there's a conversation there, if they're asking for advice, or if we're brainstorming and talking through points, let's talk about it. If not, how can we communicate this to the buyer versus just keep going round and round and saying, you know, sort of creating conflict, like looking for an excuse to get out, you know, all of those things that happen in other life situations. We need to have early stage conversations to prevent this. We need to be clear on motivations, and we need to be honest. We really, really do in these deals, because it's paramount. And if we weren't honest enough from the beginning, let's be honest now.
I think that's great. I think it's a lot of good lessons from those deals. And it's interesting because, you know, this is 2026, the pandemic on some parts feels like a long time ago and some parts doesn't feel like that long ago. But that example from that era and then what happened, it's like all of these things that can affect any and every deal. So I'm glad you shared that. I really like that as far as like example and the lessons of the last deal. And again, for both brokers listening to this and business owners, sellers, the buyers out there, like all of these are the dynamics. If you want this deal to happen, you have to manage and mitigate all of those factors. So
and just also know that the expansion of time, especially uncharacteristic or newly introduced expansion of time, is always a symptom of something. What is it manifesting? Is it manifesting doubt, manifesting uncertainty, you know, which is kind of similar? Is it friction? Is it, you know, is it new information that needs to be shared, but isn't? What is it a symptom of? Because timely proceedings signal motivation and agreement. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're moving through this together. We said we were going to do this on this timeline. Everything's tracking along. Then all of a sudden someone changes the deal and doesn't say anything, right? That's the deal. It's not the issue that came up. Right. If you came up and you said, hey, three of the most important employees in this business left. I got to be honest about this. I know that this is a material change. I still want to sell you the business. I can extend the transition. Maybe I'll start, you know, but you've maintained your original promise where I still want the deal. I like the buyer. Whereas this, it's like there's now a blind spot in an area where one party, there's an information imbalance.
Yeah. And I think that's important because as humans, our human nature is we don't like change and we really, really resist the unknown, especially as the importance of that unknown and the risk of that unknown versus, right? Like, you know, buying a different type of gum at the store, it's not really a big risk, right? Like you'll be okay. This kind of thing, like the more time happens, then factors that delay it, like you said, that delay is going to trigger something and our human side is going to hate the unknown and worry and then wonder and then start doubting, and preemptive buyer's remorse will occur. And then that's, you know, going to chip away at it as well.
Yeah. So those are the silent deal. I can talk about the deals that got away where I showed up and I wasn't compelling enough, or I wasn't experienced enough, or I said the wrong thing. Well, trust me, all of that has happened. I've lost deals on that day and night.
That happens to everybody. I think this was a really good example. All right, final portion. This is the actual after show for the after show. Is some of the I wouldn't say rapid fire question. I think I've learned, you never know what you're going to get as far as the length of an answer. When you think about what it would take for brokers, intermediaries to be successful in 5 years, which is now 2031. It was cooler when I started this and it was like 2030, had a nice ring to it, but now it's 2031. 5 years from now, having been in it for 8 years, what do you think it's going to take for brokers to be successful in 5 years?
Going the other direction from what's happening on the technology front. So become better at being in person. Differentiate yourself on the flip side. Everybody, people's offering memorandums are going to get better. Their emails are going to get more convincing. Their marketing is going to be more polished. When you show up in person, which at some point you will, how big is that gap between your polished technology self and what you, because at some point in the bigger deals that that you're involved in, the more this becomes critical. But at some point you're going to be in the deal room with experienced attorneys, accountants, with intelligent buyers asking you direct questions and having to make a point or hold a position, right? Defend a position. Can you do that without the help of AI? Do you actually know these concepts? which are, a lot of them are, psychology, biology, and sound financial principles. But do you know them? Like, how is something valued? Can you deconstruct it? If I give you the deal Rubik's Cube and I scramble it, right? Not in AI, with 10 people watching, I scramble the Rubik's Cube and I give it to you and I say, broker A, put it back together. Can you do it in real time? If you don't know where the sides are, right? If you haven't practiced it, this particular configuration, because the test is, even if you haven't seen this particular configuration, you should know enough about the principles of the Rubik's Cube to put it back together. And if you can't do it, I think the gap is going to be so striking that when you do meet in person and when the decision maker is testing you, you're going to fail.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's a really good point. The second question I would normally ask, but you addressed it, which is the tech shift side. But I think, the value of the technology is to help you do everything else as automated or as easy and simple as possible, so that fundamentally what's left is the human to human, right? It's the in-person, it's the relationship, it's the phone call, it's the stuff that is never going to be replaced in these kind of scenarios by technology, where you've got to, at some point when AI is buying and selling businesses from other AI, like, that's different. Like, then we're no longer in the loop. But other than that, like, all that will be left is the human to human, because that business owner can do the same Google, use the same AI, ask some surface level questions, get some information, but they'll never have the wisdom, which is like, okay, I got this thing, but what do I do with it? Or how do I apply this? Which is going to be the leftover part. And I love the fact that you said, like, it's going to go the other way, especially over the next 5 years, to where the in-person is going to matter, but not just showing up and being in person. But like you said, how authentic and in alignment is your digital self and the digital content and the digital presence with your in-person presence, right? Like, I've said this forever when it comes to, like, authenticity, is if you remember from school, when you met your teacher or saw your teacher out in public, and it was so weird because they're just like a normal person at the grocery store and felt odd, right? I had this impression of you here and now you're out in the wild, but like, you should always be the same person, right? You should, like, online, phone, whatever, speaking, podcasts, meeting with clients, like, basically the same person. And so that the alignment, because if it's not in that alignment, then the trust is gone. Going back to what you were talking about in the other segment about the marketing side, is that if that gap is there from your digital presence to your impersonal presence, then there's zero trust, because, like,
I don't even know who you
are. Yeah, because what other gaps do we have then, right? And I would say, you know, on the technology question, short answer, use it as a tool. If it becomes your master, you're in trouble.
Yeah, you should tell the chainsaw what to do, not the other way around, right? I don't know why that popped in my head, but like it's a tool for you to use.
Like you have to be in control. It has to be a tool. If it's a master and you can't function without it, I mean, ultimately, this is still a complex and nuanced trade and profession, and you have to have domain knowledge. If you're borrowing it all the time, you know, at some point
it's not going to work.
At some point, there's going to be a test. You know.
Yeah.
There will be a test later.
It's very interesting and it's very true. If you look at it that way, and I know I have over the last 6 months as well. It's like when there is that test. When that real conversation happens about a topic, right? Do I know about it or have I just been like using tools to fill in the gaps? Like, what do I know? And then where can the technology help speed things up to then the learning and the competence and then the application of it, right? Like think about the Matrix movie where you plug in, you've got the information, now you've got to use it, right? Just because you know something, like now, can you use it? And I think that's the balance. So this is, we're recording this after show, March of 2026. When you look at 2025, I know there was a lot that happened for you, a lot that went into it. What did you learn? What was like a big lesson you learned in 2025?
You know, my biggest challenge was industry specific, and construction suffered. There was sort of a quick turning of the tides, post-election, there was a lot of optimism in the business community. And then sort of some of the policy that came down really changed that quickly, that had an impact on housing production. And so it took a while to readjust the expectation to what was happening in front of us. And I would say the lesson there is we have to be realistic and we have to operate on real-time information, right? There was a conversation that I heard that was, you know, that I liked the takeaway and I would apply it here. And in my professional conversations is, you know, somebody had said something in a prior conversation. These two people were having a conversation. Somebody had said something prior, had established a position, and the other person said, "Well, last time you said this. So are you changing your mind?" And this person said, "Well, in the last 3 weeks, X, Y, and Z happened." So
yeah,
you know. And then he goes, "You know, when new information comes to light, I change my mind." And then he goes, "What do you do?" You know, like, how do you go about decision making, right? And so that's the lesson, is that when new information or emerging information comes to mind, we need to pivot, right? And we can't hold on always to say, you know, as I said this, and I can't, you know, this is my expertise on the line, and I need to kind of hold this line if it's no longer true or accurate. And so 2025 required multiple pivots on pivots, you know, and test that I had a good year and I think that I ultimately navigated it, but it really challenged me to change my mind based on rapidly changing new information, which is a trend that I believe will become the new normal. So you better learn to pay attention and shift and say, you know, maybe the time horizons need to compress a little bit. You know, if we, you know, 10 years ago, we felt comfortable making a 6 month forecast at any given time. You know, that's like today, that's like a 2 month weather forecast. Like we don't know. So if we're talking about weather, let's do three days. You know, that's cool. Like 3 days is nice. And so on the economic forecast, I think we have to, what I learned was to, I have to reassess more often and be more willing to align with what the data is telling me.
And I think that's a great lesson. I think that's a good one in life too, because so many times humans, because of their self-preservation model, that we have, if we're not careful, is that when we decide about something or we identify with something, then we have to stick with that and basically
to save face, right? We need to save face.
We need to save face. We need to not look bad, not look wrong, not look like we changed our mind or can't commit to anything. And I think it's a fundamental sign of someone who is definitely more advanced, where it's all about the current information available. And I think when you look at the big topics that you can't talk about at the family dinner table, it's generally because people, like, they're committed to their point of view and can't take in any new information and no other side matters. And I love what you're talking about, which is like, yeah, but in the last 3 weeks, this happened, you know, in that example. And take right now, like right now we're recording this, there's, you know, a war type effort that nobody predicted 2+ weeks ago would happen, which is just—
does that change things that we talked about a month ago, or am I acting like that didn't happen?
And you're in denial, and you know, maybe in some sectors it might not matter, but then it does, right? Like even last year, that conversation about the tariff. Well, tariff shouldn't matter. Election shouldn't matter. This shouldn't matter. It's like, but it does, because
it did in a massive way, right? I mean,
yeah.
It almost doesn't matter what will happen. Like, markets work that way. It's about what people think will happen. And that, how many times did the market move on something that people thought was going to happen that never actually happened, but real money fluctuated and changed hands and people lost and won and got nervous and sold.
Yeah.
The thing never happened. Right. But, but behaviors were impacted. And so where I rest my head, and this goes back to, if we need to wrap it up, you know, the full circle to doing a good job is, yes, if I have to communicate my change position to the client, I can always say, I need to be able to tell myself and be able to communicate it to the client that at the time, with the information available to me at that time, I made the best possible recommendation that I felt was accurate, right? With what I knew at the time, and it was an exhaustive, I need to know that I turned all stone. At that time, I made the best use of the information that was available to me. Now, that has changed. I'll be the first one to tell you I don't have a crystal ball. Right, but what I can say is, like, I'm gonna align with what's happening now. You know, I have that level of flexibility, you know, and resilience to say, okay, we need to pivot. It may be 10 degrees, it may be 65.
So based on this, where we're already started in 2026, what are you most excited about for this year? And I know, you know, there's election year, then there was a business tariff year, that was what you described in 2025, like. When you look at 2026, what are you excited about?
2026. Yeah. So things like election and, you know, geopolitics and even the macroeconomic things that largely out of my control, you know, I'm excited, anxious, fearful on that front, you know, but I can't really control that. And I try not to let that stand in the way. I'm excited about just continue to grow, you know, in business brokerage and continue delivering value. Like I like, you know, talking to podcast guests and doing the show and, kind of having these deeper level conversations. One of the things that I'm excited about, and always have been, in kind of any of my endeavors, you need to give back, right? Ultimately, you need to contribute something to whatever profession you're in. It, you know, when I was running the bakery, I didn't just want to repeat and I mean, I wanted to master the classics and all that, but ultimately, what did I bring? You know, what contribution did I make? Did I do something new, something exciting? You know, did I break some new ground, which I feel like I did, and this is outside of the scope of this conversation, but culinarily, you know, I did some exciting things, I felt, you know, and then that was kind of satisfied me and you know, that was enough to sort of keep me going. In this profession, I think what I'm trying to do with the podcast and kind of with how I sort of carry myself,
The message ultimately that I'm trying to deliver is that this is a belly-to-belly business. This is a human business. Family businesses, family always comes first. For the image that it has, for the sort of kind of like arm's length transactional space, there's a lot of deep, authentic interaction that can and should happen if you can introduce it and if you can embody that, which that's the part of the business that I'm excited about. We can have honest conversations and be highly knowledgeable and professional. Matter of fact, you need to be the best professional advisor you can be. You need to be able to have a personal conversation with the business owner because the topic is that serious. You know, we can't just sales our way through this. Ultimately, yeah, this is a high level sales profession. There is that element, right? But so deepening that groove is what I'm excited about, and having conversations with professional advisors and business, about how they go about their business and how they how they blend their personal and professional lives, how they bring what portion of themselves, hopefully a large portion of themselves, that they bring to their professional practice, and encouraging them to do more of it. With business owners, let's not just talk about, hey, here's my one endeavor, here's my next one, now I'm retired. What happened in between? It's about the transitions and the full story. You know, it's like skipping chapters in a book. If you were reading something and the main character was doing this, and then it's 20 years later, he was over here. Like, wait a minute. What did he, you had him hanging off a cliff here, and now he's riding a tricycle in a circus. I mean, that's cool. But like, how did he get off the cliff? How'd that go? You know, how did he walk out of the desert? So having those conversations with business owners and letting new business owners or emerging business owners, people considering selling, having a window into that and not just have it be numbers and figures and transactions, but hey, who are you without your business? How did that go for you? How did like reinventing yourself go for you after you managed 100 people and now your phone is silent? How are you dealing with that, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, that's an important question. I had that question. I've gone through all of this. I'm trying to bring some of that experience to the table, and probably most excited, about kind of furthering that endeavor and going deeper into that. I find that my professional engagements are sort of taking care of themselves. I think if I stay grounded in what I believe this profession is all about and what it means to be a trusted guide in something.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I'm excited about.
I love it because I think, when I hear you say give back and I think about what that means for you specifically and could be for anybody, but like you said, the podcast that you're doing, things like the newsletter, the content out there, going into the conversations with everyone, like the thing that jumps out to me is legacy. And I think one of the challenges, this is, maybe a bigger topic, but usually when someone thinks of legacy, they think of like superstars or famous people or, like a Mark Zuckerberg, people who make like big things that the world knows about. And they think a big legacy thing, a big legacy headline. Yeah. Type of people, but truly, and I learned this years ago, is that everyone has a legacy and you have it with your tribe or your group and most people's group of influence is not the whole world. It's their part of the world. And if you focus on improving your part of the world or the people that you come across in your life, then that's well done, in my opinion. Right. And that's the legacy part. I feel like that's your goal and mission and kind of your mode is just, how do you just give back? How do I just help people and get them where they're going?
I mean, these are my rock stars. Like, to me, a business owner that I'm working with you know, Mark Zuckerberg has nothing on them. Like, he's not bigger or greater or, you know, they've done great things. Good for them. But their story isn't any more or less appealing to me than that of a business owner who ran a little convenience store.
Mm-hmm.
And their plight is just as important to me, you know, the details of their story.
Yeah, there's a great book about that as well, which is called Small Giants. And it's stories of basically small companies that did really big things and small, various sizes, but definitely in the smaller employee size and what they accomplished and what that meant. And it's a great book that, you know, kind of underlines the legacy of those small businesses, not just the giant enterprises, not the global companies that people think about.
And there's a tendency to focus on them and they deserve their due and we get it. But how many times has that story been told? Does it need to be told again? Like, I don't need to tell. Like, here's what, you know, Steve Jobs did, like, for the upteenth millionth time. Warren Buffett said, like, I get it. Like, I have, you know, all the love and respect for those characters. But, you know, what about the people that have never been talked about and did things that are of equal or greater, you know, value?
And where are those big figures idolized at some level, but completely out of touch and out of scope of what others are doing, where it's unrelatable, right? Like,
it's astronomy, right? It's 100 trillion billion miles away, the star. Okay, that sounds far. I don't know how far that is. Like, you know, anything farther than 10,000 miles, I can't really comprehend. You know?
Oliver, so glad that you're here. So glad that you came back for the after show, the extended version of the after show.
The after party.
The after party. I can't even say, you know, it's like when the lights go off, this is the gap between the first part and the second part and keep this conversation going. I know going on the focus of giving back and the content, people tuning in, I'm going to put all the links in the show notes. They'll be in here. They can find you. Oliver Kotelnikov. Can find you on LinkedIn, can find the Next Venture Alliance podcast, YouTube channel, newsletter on LinkedIn, all over the place. And so much great content. If you're a business owner looking for information, a trusted guide, you want to learn a lot about what you should be looking for when you're going to exit. If you're a business broker and you want to learn, it's a lot of great content as well. And Oliver, I appreciate you being here and then also just focusing on giving back instead of just doing transactions. And
I appreciate it. Hey, thanks for the stage. Love it.
Yeah. And for everyone tuning in, please make sure to like, subscribe, share this, get this out there to more people you can. One of the things for me to give back is just to promote the professionals, the high quality, the individuals doing great things and leaving that legacy through the people they work with. And so let's get more of this out there in the world. And until next time, stop hoping for deals, start building your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.